Welcome to the Startup Microdose podcast in collaboration with childhood friend and founder of 2050 London, Adam Morrison. In this episode, we take the best excerpts of a conversation with Matt Cooper, ad industry veteran and founder of Little Black Book Online, as he takes us through the fascinating tour of the industry past, present and future. From Charles Saatchi rolling around scuffling on the floor of his offices to the future of the creative arts, Matt and Adam's co-founder Matt Saumby bring back the rock and roll of the UK ad industry. So we're trying something a bit different, aren't we, Adam? You're my long-standing childhood friend, and we're going to try and do a mashup between the Microdose and 2050 with the eye of sort of bringing in commerce, culture, some of the things that we're trying to sort of stitch together business with, what I guess?
Creativity,
ideas, right?
And ideas, big ideas, hopefully.
And we are joined by Matt, founder of LBB Online, and Saumby, also creative executive director.
You remembered, executive creative director
of 2050 London.
That's right, you got it.
And we just want to talk about the advertising industry. I mean, you guys have got a ton of experience under your belt. So, Matt, why don't you tell us about your business, how you got started, and any lead up in terms of actually why advertising was something you wanted to do at all?
It wasn't, to be honest with you. I mean, I fell into advertising. I mean, that's a long, long story. But the reason I started the business is I'd come from agency side into post-production, which is visual effects. Had a good career in that area. And I was kind of a digital guy, really. And a couple of fair-sized creatives, well, one of them big creative, John Hegarty, suggested we could do something different with a small product we'd made called Little Black Book.
And the idea that was made in-house and you guys started to spin out?
Well, I was traveling a lot on business in advertising and I started to write a little guidebook on what was happening in each city. Creatives were saying, you know, what's going on in New York, what's happening in Paris, what's happening in LA. So I started writing this little book about creativity in each city or country and city. And I think John and a couple of others suggested that there could be a lot more we could do with that. And the idea really was that there are 1,100 magazines about the business of creativity in our world. So, you know, there'll be one in Germany, there'll be four in America, there'll be six in England. And you've got to buy all those things. So a lot of expense.
The agencies.
The people. So to read about the business of advertising, you had to buy all these magazines. So we kind of came across the idea of creating a platform that would write about the business of creativity and could become one place where everyone could celebrate. So global, to cover all the different areas of advertising. So that's production, post, brand and agency, and all free to view. So what we created was this platform ground up that everyone could see wherever they were and read about the world of advertising.
Yeah, I think that's what I liked about it. It's like, you know, to get into the PR, to get into the magazines, you had to smooge, you had to wine and dine, you know, you had to get friendly with people. They've become gatekeepers of creativity and promote.
Yeah, we flipped the model. So the idea of begging an editor to be covered had gone with us. So we created a platform. You could buy into it and just be covered. So you could control your own destiny.
Right? But as ever with sort of taking apart an institution, I guess there's a lot of inertia behind people keeping those roles because ultimately they're maintaining significance. You couldn't have delivered it any sooner than you delivered it.
Well,
basically.
I mean, I think what happened was that the publication, you know, B2B publications were stuck to the model of selling a magazine with advertising in it. And that's across the whole of B2B. And that was dying. People weren't buying publications. They weren't advertising, and the job roles had gone, which was very typical. So, you know, with digital, I think all of the publications we were competing with, they had no idea. They didn't understand the digital world. So going from a piece of paper to a platform that they thought they needed to charge to view, it was never going to happen. So, you know, we put a load of content online and just pulled the masses in, and it's really worked. But our role also is to celebrate the business that we love.
Yeah.
That's really important. Theirs was really different. It was really to write about how bad things were. Ours was really different. It was to celebrate and build the business that we love.
And I think what's really interesting is over time, you've kind of built this sort of archive, haven't you? Because you've made it easier for people to sort of back catalogue their work and shout about it.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're this like global platform for all creativity.
Yeah, we are.
And that's really exciting. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of the vision?
Yeah, it's super exciting. I mean, the idea was for us to be one thing with three kind of pillars: news, work, and an award show. So we've kind of put all the areas into one place. So you can push your news, get your work up there, and then enter it into our award show. But just to go back, you know, we're not only helping companies celebrate their work, we're helping countries. So a really good example would be Ireland, for example. We started to work with Ireland very early on. So a very big Irish agency came to us, hugely famous in the local market, yet no one knew who they were in the rest of the world. And we're like, that's ridiculous. Why can that be? And they couldn't get covered in these other publications. So Campaign, that you mentioned earlier, writes about English creativity, not Irish. Ad Age in America didn't really care about Irish agencies. So what we helped was them get fame on a global scale. What happened then in Ireland was that the other Irish agencies realised they could get fame this way. So we helped the market. And that puts us very close to the whole market, not just one or two companies.
In terms of unpicking the strings, so just from an outsider's perspective who doesn't have the implicit knowledge, as you said, on a national level, you can be hugely influential. But the idea is that rather than, let's say, a US agency going, you know, we'll extend our body of work into the UK or Europe, actually now what you're saying is hire local, get the high quality talent that exists there. And historically, had they just swept through with the existing ad agency based in the US and gone, you know what, we'll have a stab at the UK market and we'll try and build out our presence that way? Or did they still go local, but they just end up at the, you know, the whoever the kingmaker decided?
Well, it depends. You know, what we want to do is support networks in local countries, yeah, or independents in local countries, but always show the best. So if you're booking.com as an example, great example, actually, we spoke to them very recently. They came to us and said, we're looking for a boutique agency in New York. Can you help us? Well, where else do they go to find that information? We actually found out at this point that, I won't mention the agency, that an agency we knew were opening an office in New York. They needed their first account, so we put the two together. And all of a sudden, you've got a dream, right? Because you've got a brand finding the agency they want.
New York, awesome.
2015. Well, that was Matt. Bloody hell, Matt. We want to go to New York.
We went open New York.
New York. So take us.
So you do. You know. You know. Our aim is to help. Is to help business.
Yeah. One thing. Just that kind of angle of empowering all creativity to rule and genuinely facilitating that. I can like talk firsthand of. We're still a small agency by comparison to the big boys, but the confidence that you get from seeing your work out there and then people talking about it is immense. I think it's hugely important, particularly in like the
People seeing your work, yeah, talking about you is really important in the creative industry. And when the gatekeepers are not letting you see the work, and it's the same faces, they publicize the same faces, the same agencies, the same bots. And you know, the smaller agencies, the younger creatives don't get that kind of platform. That, you know, that's why when we did
but that's cash, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest. That's money. So, you know, these gatekeepers aren't just gatekeepers because they're writing about the right stuff. Yeah. They want you to pay them the right amount of money. So we completely changed that. What we did was we opened a subscription fee for everyone. And whether you're a post house in a garage or a bloody great big agency in New York, you all paid the same and you all get treated the same. So what we did in a flash was we leveled the playing field. Yeah. Didn't matter who you were, and the best work shone. And it still does. So, you know, what you're really doing is you're helping the young agencies, the big agencies.
More participation. Otherwise, you get groupthink. So one of the biggest questions I have about ad tech, the advertising industry, all of that is, there's a number of different kind of routes we see with it, which is sort of, you know, agency spins up, then the bigger agency buys them, the sort of the aggregation piece around that, which is, you know, a business as old as time, versus the ad tech that's genuinely trying to disrupt it. Now, disruption can't just exist to go to the most efficient, effective technology stack, because otherwise you lose the creative component, right? If you come from outside and gone, you know what, I think we can aggregate all the agencies and I don't care about the creative purpose behind it, then you would ruin it, actually. But some people would say you've succeeded because you've made it more efficient, but actually you're eroding value over time. And then, you know, you get the accountants and whoever else comes in to run business like that who chip away at all the corners because it's not effective. So I think it's deeply important that you were the person who sprung on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we understood the business and every part of it, you know, no doubt. But I mean, back to what you were saying there, you know, much of our business in advertising now is it's about money, right? So it is groups buying up other agencies, which changes culture and changes the way we work. And So, you know, what we're doing is we're mapping this ever-evolving market. And if you're a brand right now, you need to be able to read about that, because otherwise you can't buy 1,100 magazines, and you don't know that where your, you know, your next bit of work might be made by an agency in Amsterdam or Canada. But you need to be able to read about these guys, right, to make the best work. Be informed.
Ooh, and then do you get people moving around going, because there's all sorts of weird arbitrage that go on, you know, 2050 London, you could go, actually, if we were 2050 Helsinki, then suddenly we're going to pick up a body of work because that place is now hot. We can be the best agency in there because we can, you know, outcompete the locals. And then you're going to get people kind of, it's the same with all aspects of globalization, right? It's just like, well, if you can be anywhere or everywhere, where do you go?
Yeah.
And it's where the opportunity strikes. But I guess those key hubs, New York, London, will always have some cachet about the creative. Would that be fair?
Yeah, Sydney.
I think so, but actually, I would say now that good creativity is coming from anywhere. I think that if you go back 10 years and go to an event like Cannes, you'd see typically that America or the UK and perhaps Brazil were doing really great creative work. I think what we've done is we've created an award show that judges all over the world. So we judge in country, then in region, and then globally. So it's a bit like a World Cup of creativity. And I think what you'll find now is genuinely great work can come from anywhere. I really believe that.
Doncaster?
Well, about Doncaster, but
Grimsby.
But, you know, it could do. Who knows?
I'm not sure about that.
Who knows?
Yeah. So on great work, we've got some questions.
Yeah.
A bit, so how long has it been? 35? How long have you been in the industry with Sawn before, collectively, you guys?
I think I got into it in 1996. I think that's when I got into it. I left Central St Martins and I got into it in 1996. But I started as a creative. Matt, where did you start?
Dispatch department. Yeah. So 34 or 35 years.
So the big question is, do you believe advertising has the power it once had?
I do.
And so you do?
I absolutely do.
So the classic TV, billboards, posters, that are sort of the were the go-to mediums.
Well, I think it depends.
30, you go 35, 25, 30. What's changed, do you think? You're at the epicentre of
it. I think it depends on who you are. And remember, there's a lot of B2B type stuff emerging now that people want to advertise. I think the market's changed. Obviously, there's a lot more platforms, but I don't think that's always a benefit. I mean, look, if you go back to, you know, when I first started in advertising, the head of TV was God, right? They were God. They really were. You know, you had the creative director and you had the head of TV. And I think that, you know, that was where we were then. I think now there's a lot of different channels, but I don't think that is necessary. I don't think you have to be on all those channels. And do I think the power of advertising is what it was? I absolutely do. I think,
because it feels more accessible now than the part. From a creative perspective, yeah. Okay. I think anyone can kind of advertise now. And we sort of talk about that being a great thing in one respect, because when creativity is empowered generally, that's great, because that's innovative, great things happen. But then if everyone can advertise through, and everyone can create their own ads through InDesign and pump it out onto Facebook, is that a good thing?
I know, I don't think it is necessarily. Yeah. I think that it's good because, again, there's different channels. So if you're a young brand and wanting to knock stuff out on the social channel, you might be able to do that fairly well. But look, we are living in a golden age of TV, right? There's never been better TV, ever, not ever.
This is interesting. Okay?
Is that because of reality TV?
No, it's not, because you've got Prime, you've got Disney, you've got Apple, you've got Sky, all making better content. There's no way, right? If you roll back to when I was a kid in the 70s, we had three channels.
But you had that point where everybody would have watched the same. Do you know what I mean? You'd have that point where
everyone watched Breaking Bad. Yeah, we came in here and talked about White Lotus for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? Everyone watched Breaking Bad, everyone watched Games of Thrones. TV's never been better.
Never been better. Ever. So you're watching the best TV you've ever seen in your life. Now roll back. You can't watch it all. Roll back to the 70s and 80s and 90s when TV was, you know, it was good, but like you said, we all watched the same thing. But what you watched in the break was as good as the TV you watched.
But do you think the shape, because, okay, so opportunity to still find audiences through TV, but more platforms, more channels.
Yeah.
To Ed's point, you know, when you only had three channels, you could put like £4 million into one ad to like get millions of people inspired. Are the shape of, because we talk about ad pollution, don't we, Sombi? We go, there's too much ad pollution out there.
Yeah, it's
what's driving ad pollution? Like, why aren't we, so, you're kind of going, it's never been more exciting, it's never been more powerful. We kind of go, well, there's too much ad pollution out there.
Yeah, but I mean, you pick your channels, sure, you buy your media the right way. But my point is we're seeing great TV with shit ads in between.
Yeah, right. So this
and
is
that makes no sense.
So this is the, yeah.
That makes no sense.
So standards have got...
So there's more ads being made than ever before,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But they're not getting better. And there's no reason for that. If you're making better content...
Famous phrase in there, the adverts were better than TV, and most of the time that was true. I think the advertising industry has lost its ambition in a way, and I think there's a lot of negativity. Oh, people don't watch ads, oh, people don't watch TV. They're just fulfilling this narrative. And I think it's absolute bollocks. People are watching TV shows more than ever. If you walk down the street and look at the posters in the street, now, you can't skip, Hegarty always says you can't skip posters. It's true, you're walking down the street, aren't you? You know, most people look, you know, argument and looking at the phone, but you've got to look up at some point or else you get run over. Posters are there. So when you walk down the street, why aren't all the posters? Because that's the ultimate catch-all, isn't it? Because everyone has to leave the house at some bloody point, and there's a poster there. Why are the posters all shit? Quite frankly, when was the last poster that made you put the foot on the brake and go, my God, look at that? I remember when I went to art school, the foundation in Grimsby. Done that many, many years. And basically, it was like the young ones. It was like, you know, imagine these students. And basically, they'd gone around Grimsby and they'd pulled down the old... Benson and Edges had just done their campaign. And I remember then, they'd gone up and they got a ladder and they'd pulled down all the posters. And they'd decorated the whole house with Benson and Hedges advertising, because he was that bloody good. And we were art students, and we saw it as art, and they loved it. And that's how good advertising... How many times do you think kids now are pulling down the posters to decorate the walls? No. Ooh. So why is that? You know, it's like we've lost the ambition, I think, what brands can have and how they can impact culture.
Well, I guess it's this debate over occupying mindshare, isn't it, right? And that one ad that was high quality, that was art, lived with you
forever.
You know, I can still remember the Hovis ads or whatever, exactly. Or Heinz Means Beans, you know, Beans Means Heinz. It's like those things stick, but there's also a lot of thought was being put into that mind seed. And nowadays, it's just like, how can I occupy your attention in all different...
You're right.
You know what I think of with TV advertising? It's Domino's. That's the first thing that comes to my head. It's Domino's, because it just interrupts you. It's the kind of thing you may order while watching TV, but I can't think of any ads recently that have stuck with me.
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, watching, something that's really...
Well, you
really
still get your moments, don't you? You get, you know, you get Christmas, you get the John Lewis sort of fights, and there is good stuff being made, but just not enough of it.
Yeah.
I think there's two, I mean, you could talk about all the things that have affected, I mean, you know, just before I got into advertising, you know, media and the creative was together, right?
Mm.
So you've had all these moments across the last 40 years, you know, media was where you made your money, the creative was done free. And then you got financial directors.
So you mean the media spend, so you get percentage of media budget spent and you go...
Well, the way you used to buy adverts was you'd buy the media and the creative would be free. What we've never worked out how to do since then is charge for the creative. And that's a real problem in our industry. It's a massive problem.
They gave away the bit that made them different and made them unique. They gave away the good stuff.
Well,
it's easier to sell media because it's tangible.
No, actually, what they thought they could do was make money twice. So we'll sell the media and we'll sell the creative. But they've never really worked out how to sell the creative. And that's a big issue in our business. You know, how do you charge for creativity? Exactly. It can't just be by the hour. It can't be by the day. So as you charge for that? And it's an ongoing conversation. Then you've got groups. You've got procurement. You've got... You know, God, you could go on. You've got all this stuff. So, you know, when all of a sudden you're an agency with 400 offices, you're not thinking in a feral creative way. You're thinking about stock market. So you've got all these things that have affected this.
What makes a good agency?
No,
good
I was
business?
Literally about to ask that. What is the culture? If you look back 30 years and then today, if you were to start an agency, Matt, and we're trying to get one going.
I'd answer that with any company.
Yeah,
you need strong leadership. And if you haven't got strong leadership, you've got a real problem. And that, you know, I mean, I'm 34 years in the business and I've been in agencies like Saatchi's in the 80s where the leaders were, I mean, they were unbelievable.
What makes when you say unbelievable?
Well, you had Morris and Charles Saatchi, you know, and they'd roll around fighting on the floor if the ideas were... And I don't joke. And you'd have them taking windows out to turn the front reception into a Toyota car lot to win the account. The effort that went into it was unreal, and it was all about the money they could make. It was all about money, of course, but yeah. At that point, it was an independent company.
Well, it was like that, right. AMV, like you had to go to the seventh floor.
Exactly.
It
was so like, the account people, the fans had to travel up. So the respect was on the creative department floor. Right?
It's almost like reverence, right? I think we lack reverence, and that can be a creative aspiration as well as a...
Well, but Peter Mead used to talk about it. Literally, he said, when he did talks to the account management, he'd go, your job, the core part of your job is to cocoon the creators, basically, cushion them. They should not be exposed to all the bullshit that goes into fucking up an idea, essentially.
Okay.
And you need to like protect them and look after. It was really interesting, but very different to
but
other
just
places.
To play,
different to Saatchi's. I don't know.
Well,
Saatchi's
to play
like
devil's
that.
Advocate, I think that I think this thing that we call creatives. By the way, I'm not knocking creatives because I mean that's where all the ideas come from. I think everyone who works in agencies are creative.
Exactly.
I really believe this, and
yeah.
I think
yeah,
you know,
right.
An account guy or a planner, a strategist.
Definitely.
I mean, I spoke to a strategist yesterday, who's a brilliant mathematician. He could have made a ton more money working in the city, and that's where he started.
Yeah.
But he didn't like it. He wanted to be in the creative world. So I think everyone who works in this business is a creative. I think what we need is more entrepreneurialism.
Who ring fences creativity, right? Because the one thing I would say, and interesting to your point, is you can create chaos, you can create fraud, you can create misery, you can create lots of things. And I think
to get to an idea.
In life, like you can create anything you want, right? And the problem is if there's no meaningful outlet, it could become you create an abusive culture in your workplace, because ultimately, you know, it's like leaving a dog at home and it tears up all the stuff because it's not stimulated, and to the point of that
but
guy leaving finance.
That's the stories of Saatchi's, that's what they...
So they tried to create friction.
They wanted that conflict,
but it's back to the leadership. I mean, I always think about any business again, but particularly our business, because you have you have teams, right?
Yeah.
And I always think about a football team. You know, you've got
a midfield. Which football team are you supporting?
I'm a Tottenham fan, unfortunately.
I'm an Arsenal fan.
Okay, so well, you're doing really well. Actually, I love watching Arsenal, man. But you've got a defence, you've got a midfield, and in the back you've got a keeper. But what you've got on any great football team is a brilliant manager. He's
yeah,
an absolutely true. Brilliant manager. I mean, you know, Tottenham and Arsenal are actually quite good examples. Both young sides, managing incredibly well. Nice people who are fighting for the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think in most of these companies now, you don't necessarily have that. And I'm not...
Really?
So that was
one of my questions, the good, the bad and the ugly of working with creative agencies today. And do you feel that there is a lack of management within creative?
I think there's friction. I think that... I do. I think in many of these companies, there's friction. And I do think there's some agencies that work incredibly well. And, you know, what we're seeing at the moment, and, you know, and I think some of the bigger networks, bigger holding companies like WPP and Publicis are doing some really interesting stuff at the moment with new good leaders. And I think that, you know, you're seeing lots of, I mean, particularly in Canada and North America and the UK, you're seeing many CTOs and big creators leave to create independent agencies.
Yeah.
And there's more independent agencies starting now than ever before, because they want to do something that isn't just about money. Sure, we want to make money, but at the moment, a lot of it is based on how much money you can make. And, you know, Uncommon, I think, is a really good example as an agency. They kind of want to choose the brands that they work with.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Neil's a good team in champions creativity, and he's the voice of creativity, and he's a big owner of the company. That's what I'm saying, you know. He creates that culture and, you know, champions creativity. You know?
And running the company the way he wants to run it.
Yeah.
So it's not just about bottom line.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem. In a business of creativity, you can't, you know, if it's got to be bottom line, I'm glad you get there.
If you want to attract the best creative talent, you need to set them free and make sure they're doing great creative work that they're proud of. Ultimately, most creatives get into it because they want to show their mum what they're doing, you know, or their mates in Doncaster or whatever it is. They're just... You know, that's what it's about, man.
I feel that's, in a way, again, if it's just to use the bad example of Mad Men, I thought the creatives were everything, right? It was not only am I going to be creative, I'm going to earn loads of money and I'll be a prestigious member of society. And in terms of how different these agencies operate, it's very easy to look into an industry and go, WPP, like you look at banks, JP Morgan, you go, they must all be the same, but clearly they're not. So I think to Adam's point earlier, what is how do you set it up for success? So you don't look at the bottom line, you want to actually have some integrity.
Well, I think Matt touched on, I mean, it's interesting, sort of management.
So Matt, I was going to say, if you were going to give somebody some sort of pragmatic advice, if they're going to start an agency, or give Adam the advice, top down, creating that, what do you think the kernel of success would be? Or how would you structure it? What are the things that people need to be paying attention to? Even on the operational side of things, you know?
Well, I'd say the same about any business. Again, it's all about your people.
Yeah.
And I think if you can get a bunch of people in and help them grow a career, which is so rare now.
Yeah.
You know, people are taking jobs and they're taking bad jobs. I think if you can take a bunch of young people in, educate them, and really, really honestly want to grow a career for them, you're going to be all right. I think if you can look after them, nurture them, give them the experience they need, train them, and really love them. Because, I mean, I think, you know, jobs are tough. You know, working in some of these agencies now, it's hard. It's really hard. So I think my thing would be it's all about the people.
But do you bring in a big chairman who's got a great black book of contacts and he can go, you know what, I'll get you guys started.
Will that be useful?
Yeah, because I guess...
Have you got one of those?
How do you load the dice in that sense? And equally, because to your point, it's all about there being more agencies than ever, do you just get a lot of people who are now prepared to agency hop because they go, well, I'm 25, 28, I'll go to a different one, then I'll go to a different one?
I think within that specifically, something that we talk about is, and which is what Matt's talking about in terms of the mechanics of achieving it, it's a little bit of a cliche, but it's so true, it's that energy. Like clients, when you jump on a call, particularly on Zoom, if you've got energy, mm-hmm. like they're doing all this fucking shit and then they're coming on, they're talking to a creative agency, and if you're full of ideas and you've got energy and you've got people that are well-nurtured, they're passionate, they're focused, they know where to put their energy, mm-hmm. and they're motivated, that's the culture and that's what separates.
But and you're growing a career, that's the important bit.
Sorry?
And you're growing the
career. Yeah, and you're growing the career with clearly defined goals, targets, so they know where they're going, so that you're constantly pushing them onwards. But it's that energy that you need to get across, because that's what that is ultimately is what's going to.
And interesting, you talk about freelance. I think there's a big movement at the moment. So big companies creating freelance pools.
Yeah.
Which definitely gives you access to good talent, but that's all it is. And I think that talent has to be managed.
It's like a football club, isn't it? You're back to the manager.
I think that people want a career. I think people want to do a bit of moonlighting, sure. And there's this whole thing now. What do we call it? Second job. What do we call this thing? You've got a second job now. What's it called?
Side hustle.
I think that's utter bollocks. I think that is utter bollocks. So people don't want a side hustle. They want a job and a life.
What they may be saying is option one's actually crap.
That's what they're saying.
And actually, my heart and my head are not in this.
I tell you, if you can get a team of people together, and I think, you know, agency-wise, forget the agency, it's any business, isn't it? If you can lead a team and create a plan and have a goal and believe in that goal, believe, I mean, that's a word a lot of people don't use now. You've got to have belief and you go for it. Plans change, right? Your plans shouldn't be too stringent. But I think if you can pull a team of people together who believe in that goal and lead them on that journey, then you'll probably be all right.
Is that harder right now? Because one thing I'd say is that, you know, would you give them a beautiful, amazing, creative office space to be in as well? Like to your point, like the creative teams, maybe they want their own section so that they can feel that they are energized by their own existence rather than just the shop floor and everything. Like, are we giving things a fair chance or giving them the tools to thrive, and now we're deconstructing the office, is that fundamentally going to really start impacting culture and all these?
Might do. I think what Matt touched on though, in terms of a goal, getting a team together, being aligned on a vision, where you're going, making sure that the behaviours are aligned. I mean, it's a brand. Mm. Really, like when you start thinking about like what a brand is, that is that you have a vision, you have a set of behaviours, mm-hmm. There's an idea that you're going to attack and everyone gets behind it, and you either write for it or you're not. And if you find the right talent that want to be part of that brand, going in that direction, it doesn't matter where you are. You can be remote, you can be in an office, you can be in a pub. Everyone's motivated. It's like Extinction Rebellion, isn't it? But they had an office, mm-hmm. but eventually. But it started from disparate groups coming together because there was a brand there that's fucking saved the world. So,
how does a creative agency then self-brand?
They have to. That's the culture point. So they have to. They have to become a brand. So like, 2050, that was something at the beginning that we were like, if we're going to try and make a success of this, we've got to be really clear about what our brand is. What is our philosophy that drives our belief in changing the future for brands and the world? And we talk about energy and positively bonkers. And that's a way of thinking about the right people to join the company so that they feel energized, because they feel like, I want to be part of this because I want to be positive bonkers about changing the future of the world.
We want to change the future through creativity. Who doesn't want to jump on board
that? That's our brand. And that's what motivates people, hopefully, in the long run. It doesn't matter where you are. You're positive bonkers and you're changing the world. You know, that's our thinking.
But what are the components? Because I think implicit, there's almost like a hack there, right? If you talk about 2050, aspiration is automatically embedded into it, because it goes, what happens in 2050 or what happens in 2020? Are we on hoverboards? Are we? What is there? So you've got the aspirational
component,
right?
Thinking about the future and how things can change. Yeah, and that's us. But for Matt, you know, we work with you on your brand. It's about empowering creativity to rule.
And what were the questions there? So you came to them and you go, hey, what work can we do? And how did you start? How did you go through that process? And how did you end up on the sort of fixed product? I mean, Little Black Book, right? Somebody could go, you know, the branding will be black and we'll use sort of like, you know, where do you start?
Well, I think there was kind of a strategy session or 10, right? But I think really with these guys, it went back to the creative idea, really, truthfully. I think, right? Am I right in saying? We could talk all day about that kind of, but I think what you have to do is you have to, if you're going to engage creative people, you have to trust creative people.
Yeah.
So there's no point engaging creative people if you're not going to trust them. That's ludicrous.
I think the trust can evaporate because the moment you have is when the client comes to you and goes, you know, what's creative? And you go, okay, we've got this for TV. And then they go, what are we doing on TikTok? And then suddenly you go, we'll do this because, you know, we don't really believe in it, but because you want a strategy there, we're going to cook one up, get some creative across. And then it's like people following the direction of the client, but now because it's not all geared towards TV or like a set package, does that erode the trust as well? Because suddenly you're going,
I think it does. I think that there's a movement in our world to say you can do everything, which has come really from the big networks who have bought companies. So what they've got is a big tool set. Now there are other companies, and I think probably one in Kenya, a good example, who kind of went out and did lots of different stuff, but realised they were very good at making a TV ad. So kind of stuck to that really high-end, I'm just using them as an example, creative TV ad, really. That's not what they do, by the way, but they stuck to that thing. And I think where we've ended up now is we've ended up with a bunch of generalists in our business.
And it's weird, right? Because you think the modern era is great specialists,
so
now
weird.
We've almost engineered.
There's never been a time where you need specialists more. So, you know, you've got big networks of created production environments, and I get that. There's a good reason for that, right? They want to make more money because they can't sell their creative, and they think they can make stuff quicker and faster and smarter. But I think what we've ended up with is loads of generalists, and I think more than ever this industry needs specialists. Craft, go back to craft. Everyone thinks they can post-produce. They can't. You know, good visual effects are hard. And, you know, I worked in a visual effects company, and what those guys do is they'll make the software to create crowds and tech. And so
Didn't Amazon get called out recently for Lord of the Rings, and they had whatever their $1 billion budget, and they said that somebody picked apart the scenes and said, look, you can see the copy and paste of the crowd. So that's just so lazy. If you don't care, why should the audience?
It is, and, you know, for some things now, people don't care. The younger crowd don't care so much about craft, perhaps, because they're watching things a different way. But I think specialism has got to be part of the future of our business. You can't, you know, I sit and watch. I mean, we work with 2,500 different creative companies. And what's happening now is that you might go to a post-production company, used to do just post, they've now hired strategists and creatives and are creating. You might go to a production company, used to direct and now hiring creatives. And I'm not saying this is wrong, but then you'll go to an agency who are now doing their own post and hiring creatives. So everyone's doing the same. So if you're a brand, you're listening to all this noise, well, we can do it, you can't. You know, you should stick to what you really know. It's really important, honestly.
It's true, and that's, I sort of see more of a return to, so from a creative agency and advertising perspective, the return of, like, philosophy. Like, Sir John Hegarty, he always said, we're an industry of ideas. It doesn't matter what the technology is. The idea's got to live in the technology, but what's the philosophy behind the idea? Like, what's going to drive the idea, irrespective of the platform and the technology? And he was all about irreverence. So you knew a BBH ad. It had a feel to it, had a style to it.
And effectiveness, though.
And the effectiveness as a consequence of that, because the creatives and that agency has got a point of view on the shape of the communications that's going to drive the effectiveness. But it's about the philosophy. And I think that's the way to overcome that. You can operate in lots of different channels and platforms. You can be a little bit more generalist. Mm-hmm. Of course, you've got to have the specialist craft skills, like Matt said, but to be the owner of the big platform and the big idea, what's your philosophy? And that goes back to your brand. And I think, again, going to Saunders, that's the culture bit piece.
We leave the episode there to serve as a vignette of the ad industry and to shine a bit of light on 2050 London and Little Black Book Online. If you'd like to find out a bit more about either, please go and visit them online. I'm sure they'd appreciate it.